I want to say tonight is going to be different, but just hang on. We're going to start with some chanting. Now here, the theory is, the sentience you are, the sense of I am, your beingness, is not the body, but it's suffused through the body. And when you listen to the chanting, try to feel the chanting within yourself, within that vacuous sense of presence. And if you can't do that, that's throughout your body. Rather than hear it from the outside, hear it from the inside. The point of the chanting is to soothe the mind and slow it down to make it more receptive to later talks, stuff we talk about. This is a new chant.
Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya. Radhe Govinda Krishna Kanaya.
It's only in your mind that the sound comes from outside. Convince yourself you can hear from within your body.
Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya. Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda,
Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda,
Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda,
Krishna Kanaya, Radhe Govinda,
Radhe Govinda, Krishna Kanaya. Krishna Kanaya, Bhajamana Krishna, 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 Krishna Kanaya. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Kanaya.
Bhajamana Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna Kanaya.
Last two times I've been talking about Advaita, but today I want to talk about something different. And it's bhakti, it's love, and love for the guru. I loved my teacher, Robert, unbelievably for a long period of time. And before we get into that, one more chant, which is the Jota Sajota. Which is basically, it says in English, kindle my heart's flame with thy flame. Sadaguru, kindle my heart's flame with thine. There are two types of people that come, many types, into spirituality. The Ramana, my teacher, divided them into two types, jnana, jnanis, and bhaktis. Jnanis were like me, like Michael, who sought knowledge of the ultimate truth directly through the mind. And then there are the bhaktis like Ramakrishna and a lot of the women devotees in all practices who seek the ultimate truth, who seek satisfaction, who seek eternal rest in themselves through loving the teacher, loving other people, loving themselves. This is the way of bhakti. And this used to be a straight jnana practice here. There is no affect allowed in my satsangs. But so many bhaktis started coming. And it awoke that same similar feelings in me. And because of that, I'm teaching a lot differently. And this is really, really important. I had no idea that I was having impact on you people out there in video land. But a lot of people were saying it's my sense of presence or my presence is very powerful. I don't feel that. What I feel more and more now is great love for all of you out there, my viewing audience, and those who I talk to every day. Let's try this Jota Sajota. And try to feel the effect of love. And then I'm going to go into that a little more.
Jota Sajota Jagavo Sate Guru Jota Sajota Jagavo Mera Antara Timira Mitavo Sate Guru Jota Sajota Jagavo
Sarveshwara he Paramesvara
We used to have a growing and thriving satsang here in Los Angeles. And then suddenly it disappeared overnight. One person left, another person got ill, and satsang disappeared in Los Angeles overnight, which just goes to show you the variability of consciousness. And you can't count on anything in consciousness. Nothing is permanent. Everything changes. Even the most electrifying symphonies end, sometimes abruptly, with no warning. But it's all a gift. It's all a gift. I want to show you now the difference between some of the devotees in the past and the devotees now and where this satsang is going. I emailed one of the people in Los Angeles that left and said, "Hey, I miss you. What happened? Where'd you go? Where'd you disappear to?" And she responded, and this is how I might have responded a year ago. "I haven't disappeared. In fact, I'm alive and well in XX. I have witnessed the LA Satsang group move and shift, and I am included in that mix. My practice continues. I deeply welcome its presence in my life. I hope your online satsang is satisfying for you. I have not had the opportunity to view it. Wishing you all the best always with love, K." Now, this is a person that even before satsang used to come with other people to my house to visit and to have an informal satsang. But she disappeared. "I hope your online satsang is satisfying for you. I have not had the opportunity to view," and she used to come all the time, but doesn't say the reason why. And then she sent another one. "Dear Ed, there's no longer a satsang in LA. There is a shift. I was in the mix. Now it is no longer. It seems to be a natural unfolding for me and all. Why, I have no idea. Just witnessing it all. All the best. K." And that's from a person that used to attend all the time and then disappeared. Then yesterday, from the West Indies, a person who speaks French. And then the English was translated by one of those Google translation devices that are hopelessly poor. So I'll give you this somewhat edited version of what he said, but it's such a difference. "Hello. I fell on your text, whereas I was feeling hopeless to ever meet a teacher who could help me. I am animated by the permanent obsession to bore into the mystery of life. everywhere, always, and near such a person who has helped me meet. Meet the teachings said that no effort was necessary, where I believe, by my own experimentation, that it is possible to do something to advance towards the light. I read and read again all the text translated into French on your site and printed 97 pages of autobiography of a Yanni, which I keep near me on the bed. I cry sometimes by reading the complicity which settled between you and Raji. Comprehension of what is known as one with the other is moving so much so that I feel impotent never not to have met that teacher. I do not know if my control of English language here is an obstacle with an exchange between us, but my most cherished wish is really to be heard and to find an echo in you with the request which is mine. I can, if I so should be moved, to take English courses. I can yield with all the ideas, experiments, or the instructions which you will be able to give me to live, that I am ready and I have so much energy to deploy inside, which I do not have any doubt about my aptitude and my motivation to make what is there. Please hear me. I live in the French West Indies in Martinique, and I am far from all in a very small country. But I know that one needs more than an ocean to prevent me from meeting somebody like you. Answer me, please. Tears run in my eyes by writing. And yet I'm a father and I'm 53 years old. So long, Jean-Marc. What a difference. What a difference. He's a bhakti, he's a natural bhakti. And what I've been teaching lately is exactly, where is that? What Nisargadatta has been. And I read him now, and I find myself in his teachings. Exactly what I'm saying is what he says. And I'm going to one other book right now by Sadhu Om. Listen to this, and then I'll get to the Nisargadatta. When having wept and wept with intense yearning for a long time, unceasingly thinking of and adoring the gracious feet of Ramana, the mind which rises as such and such dissolves and becomes pure. The blemishless self-inquiry will become firmly settled in the heart, and the experience of self will be of its own accord arise, and very easily indeed. And then about the identity between knowledge and bhakti. By means of our love of God, he will give us more knowledge of him. And by means of our knowledge of him, he will give us more love for him. Therefore, these two paths, bhakti and jnani, follow that one for which you first gain a liking because of the one path will lead you to follow the other one into the heart. The life of the aspirant who is seeking liberation, bhakti and jnana, will be experienced as inseparable, like the two sides of one sheet of paper. Hence, each one is equal to the other. They are not two different things, for the true nature of both of them is one and the same. Know that bhakti and jnana are merely two names for that one thing. And then Nisargadatta. I found this the other day. His talk on September 28, 1980. Questioner, by so much attraction of the I am for the body, why is that? Nisargadatta responds, when it expresses itself as I am, it is already fully charged with the love to be. Why in the insect, worm, animal, or human being, this instinct to keep itself alive? Because with the sprouting of the life force, this I amness that is itself the very instinct to live, to love to live, that love is to be the prime motive force of all of life's activities. You will find when you are the manifest consciousness, you alone are the multiplicity. you express yourself in all this ample manifest world. The state itself will be transcended, and you will be the Nirguna state. This is the state beyond emptiness state, the nothingness state. But these are your expressions. Only you, as I amness, are your expressions. What I'm talking about now is more subtle and more profound and very difficult to understand. But if you understand this, the job is done. Consciousness is an aid to know. Presently, that consciousness knows itself as the body. It should not be so. Consciousness should know consciousness, bereft of the body sense. The I amness is a sense of presence. Often the sense of presence seems to be identified with the body, with the feelings of the body, with ecstasy and other kinds of things, but the I amness is not the body. The I amness is the fragrance of consciousness. But consciousness itself arises because the body and the mind arise. So they are tied together, but he says not to identify with the body portion, but to identify with the essence, the I am, which through time, through purification, through self-attention, becomes transparent. And through that transparency, you see your true nature, or you apprehend your true nature as the absolute, the Nirguna state, the state of nothingness, which you truly are, which is beyond the four states. Now, you all know that Rajiv came to me totally surrendered about 2 or 3 years ago. And we had that dialogue that took place over 3 or 4 months, which resulted in his understanding truly his own nature and the samadhi states that led up to his nature. But he was ripe, and he was totally surrendered. And a few months ago, somebody else came. And I published on the blog today something she said. It's not working. We're only hearing every third word.
Okay, this is not good, maybe.
I'll read it. This is Janice. And I'm just in love. Nothing is eternal, but drinking your wine. And she says, only when I love deeply in the authentic experience of love, am I identified with the eternal aspect of love that moves through a changing consciousness from life to life. In that loving, I know I am, and I am is eternal. Now, I am is not eternal like nothingness. But I am is eternal insofar as sentience exists throughout the galaxy. Everywhere, somewhere, sentience is and I am is. She quotes, there's no reason for bringing my life to you other than losing it. Janet says, I realize that in love, all that was cherished and held dear in life is dropped. The identity and life of the lover has disappeared, and only the loving remains, which she identifies with. She quotes, I said, I just want to know you and then disappear. She said, knowing me does not mean dying. Janet said, when listening to this, I asked myself, who is this I and who is this she, as a spontaneous self-inquiry. I saw both as spoken from the Absolute. I, the Absolute, want to know my attributes through you, all appearances, through all of phenomenality. I, the Absolute, want to know all of my attributes through phenomenality, through the I Am. And then the response from her being like an echo from the Absolute again, reassuring us that this knowing doesn't mean death. And it says, in every moment I am loving you, I am eternal. In every moment I am loving you, I am eternal. Because the I am, and I'm saying this, because the I am and the love are both permanent aspects of sentience. They are, we'll say, the essence of phenomenality. And in that sense, they're eternal. Insofar as there's life, they're eternal, and you're identifying with that. In every moment I am loving you, I am identified with that eternal I am and that eternal I, or eternal love. Through the experience of love, we transcend death here in the phenomenal world. In deep gratitude and love, Janet. Well, I felt amazed when I heard this. Janet had an awakening experience about 2 or 3 months ago, but because of the complexity of her life, it disappeared. But she's been integrating it ever since. And it comes out in time after time in little vignettes. And I said to her, Janet, your depth is amazing. You challenge me. Through love, you have come to know the absolute, or at least about the absolute, so intimately. No one knows the absolute directly through consciousness. Only consciousness is disappearance through the purification of devotion. Only by consciousness disappearance through the purification of devotion. The attributes of the lover disappear, leaving only the transparent I am through which the absolute shines. You have brought jhana and bhakti together so beautifully, combining love, I am, and the witness in Rumi's poem, and as an embodiment of the truth of Nisargadatta's teaching and mine, by arriving at the absolute through your loving I amness, which was revealed when you loved me. I am so glad God sent you to me so that you could know and love your deepest aspects, deepest self through me. What a gift for both of us. You are beginning to articulate deep truths that will move many people in the future. See, there are so many paths to truth, to awakening. There are so many different kinds of awakening. There's no one final awakening. There's no, trying to find the commonality between Nisargadatta's enlightenment, Ramana's enlightenment, Robert's enlightenment, or all of the others is a fool's task. Each person is separate. Their understanding is separate. Their experiences are separate. And insofar as they're alike, that's good. That means you're on the right path. You're on a path that will open for you. Because you share a similar genetic code, training, whatever. So you go to a teacher or a lineage that you're comfortable with, seems to reveal the depths of whoever you are through the practices they use and the talks that they give. Now, I guess 5 or 6 people's claim to have awakened by following me, and I don't know how many under Robert, but most of the people disappear. They send 8 or 10 emails, and they seem to have a deep knowledge, and then I never hear from them again. And a few of them stick around, like Dia and Janet and Rajiv. But really, only 3 are sticking around. Me. And around Robert, I knew very few. Nobody stayed long around the great teachers. I'm not saying I'm a great teacher, but like around Robert, very few. He didn't want to have a lot of people around him. He kept pushing them away, seeing who would stick. But those who loved him turned out all right in the end. Those who stayed with him turned out all right in the end. All the others were squabbling whether he was a true teacher or not, a true Yanni or not, and saying, well, a Yanni wouldn't do this, a Yanni wouldn't do that, a Bhakti wouldn't do this, a Bhakti wouldn't do that. God, I heard this shit all the time. And I said this kind of stuff all to myself through years of visiting various gurus. There's so much doubt, so much criticism based on concepts of how a guru should be and how a spiritual path should be, based on reading hundreds of books, but not practicing enough. So, Michael, how do you find the noumena? How do you directly apprehend the noumenal world, the noumenal self? That's what this is all about. What's the relation between the phenomena and the noumena? And how do you directly grasp the noumena? And you can't grasp noumena as an object because it becomes an object in the process and is no longer the subject. And that's the eternal problem of any kind of dualistic thinking or philosophy. And yet, deep down inside, I'm still Kantian. And I identify with the noumena, the emptiness, which, although I can't directly apprehend it, I know it. Because I can take the position where I watch the coming and going of consciousness, the various states, the waking state, the sleep state, the dream state, and no state where I perceive nothing. And yet, when I become conscious again, I'm well aware that I was somehow, in some way, not as an object, not as phenomena, but as the source, as Ramana calls it, and Robert called it, or the self, which is the visible aspect, the I am. Sentience part that contains the manifest world, the projections, and our subjective sense of presence. But there's a principle behind that that watches all of this come and go and is not changed by it. It's like it comes from a different dimension and is only peering through binoculars at what's happening in this world of phenomenality. And the gateway to know this absolute is through love and through devotion. I practice and practice and practice for well over 25 years, meditation, sometimes 10 hours a day, all kinds of samadhis disappearing, Mount Baldy, all kinds of gurus, all kinds of koans, hundreds of koans, all kinds of states. But I kept coming back as me. And it wasn't until I met Robert, and even after 2 years of fighting him, did I surrender to my teacher? I loved him. And in him, I saw something beyond all of the teachings, beyond even Ramana, beyond all of the Nisargadatta. I saw an embodiment in him, in his presence of such depth and power and unmovingness. Nothing touched him. I've never met anybody like that. Nothing touched him. And yet he was gentle and accepting of all of us. He loved us all in a very gentle and kind of aloof way. One could say he was pretty cold. But he accepted us all from where we were. Sometimes he used to criticize me. He'd look deeply into my eyes, as if I was a little gnat that had offended him somehow. He'd look at me. Long time. Then he'd say, he put his hand on my head and he says, Ed, you're all right. I mean, he made me feel like a worm for 30 seconds and then he says, you're all right. Fortunately, I had another teacher at the time who I saw maybe once every 3 or 4 months, and that was Gene Dunn, who was one of the two successors for Nisargadatta. And when Robert was busy tearing me down, she was busy tearing me up, saying, you understand enough, don't worry. So between the two, they wrecked me. I didn't know which way I was coming or going. But with Robert, it was hard to feel his sense of presence because it was as if there was nobody there. I can feel the sense and presence of, you know, all of you, and I know you can feel me. But imagine looking at someone, being close to someone, and seeing nothing's there. There was no presence there. He was completely empty. And I was completely empty till a few months ago. And then this sense of presence came and has been bothering me ever since. Nisargadatta said, what did he say? Because my mother and father had a few minutes of fun, it's caused me 80 years of misery. And this is where the whole new class of Facebook gurus come in, the Neo-Advaitins. Just be exalted in the moment where the I am-ness greets the world and shakes hands with the phenomenality. Be in the present. And I'm not sure what they mean by that, whether they mean the present in terms of being in the world or the present in terms of being in their own sense of presence in the I am-ness, or in both. But to meet a teacher where there's nobody there at all and is still able to interact with you and live and talk to you, it was like talking to Pinocchio with the strings, but without the strings. There was nothing there. But after you knew him a while, a very cool sense of presence. It was so disarming. Being around him, I went home and I had to go to sleep for 3 hours, 4 hours. I was totally dysfunctional. He made me as worthless and useless as he was. It was catching. But unfortunately, Robert's gone, and you're left with me. And I'm stuck with a sense of presence now, which I didn't have a year ago. I was blissfully happy being nobody. But now I've come back again, and I have a sense of presence, and allows me to teach better, much better. Because I can love you now, and before I couldn't love you. I can greet you now where you are, and before I couldn't greet you. I do love you all. Anybody that comes here to share this time with me. Do we have any questions? Now, there should have been a settling in us through all of this talking and getting into the deeper levels of our awareness. And there is actually no levels, but I mean by feeling into your body, sense of presence, and being able to feel beyond that sort of the background that you are. Sink into that place if you can. Feel that external music is coming from your own soul, not through the earphones. You are singing it out to the manifest.
Jai Ma Kali Duge Ba Kali Ma Jai Ma Kali.
follow the music down to the center of your being. Locate the I Am. Feel the music permeate your I Am, your sense of existence. My camera has deserted me. I am now a ghostly blob in my own. This is where I deserve to be. I'm very ethereal now. So I read you three emails. And there's a lesson here. The first one said, "Dear Ed, there is no longer an LA satsang. There is a shift. I was in the mix. Now it is no longer. It seems to be a natural unfolding for me and all. Why? I have no idea. Just witnessing it all. All the best. K." That's a dead person. And then there is this man from the islands. "My most cherished wish is to really be heard and find an echo in you with this request of mine. I am ready and have so much energy to deploy it inside, which I do not have any doubt about my aptitude and my motivation to make what is necessary. Please hear me. I know one needs more than an ocean to prevent me from meeting someone like you. Answer me, please. Tears run in my eyes by writing. And yet I'm the father of, and 53 years old." And then Janet, who, it was amazing. Janet came filled with love, and she has done nothing but express love and a little anger here and there over a period of time. And there are so many colors she explores. And I could watch her mind putting all of these things together, sewing them together, until there's this kind of maturity of pure experience combined with mind to be able to bring these things together, all the teachings of Nisargadatta and mine, into a poem from Rumi that nobody can understand until you give it this kind of life by explaining it. She said, Janet said, "When listening to this, I asked myself, who is the I and who is the she? As a spontaneous self-inquiry, I saw both as spoken from the absolute. I, the absolute, want to know my attributes through you, through appearances, through phenomenality." And then the response from her being like an echo from the absolute, again reassuring us that this knowing doesn't mean death. "In every moment I am loving you, I am eternal. Through the experience of love, we transcend death here in the phenomenal world." See what it takes to really free yourself and to go beyond? There's an intensity that's necessary. If you're dead, you'll never make it. And the I amness, the activation of the I amness, the activation of the powerful need to search and to understand. No. It takes that kind of intensity to penetrate out of our concepts and out of our preconceptions and out of the conceptual molds and to begin to experience things in a raw way, a new way, without the interference of mind. It takes that kind of intensity of love or one-pointed meditation to stop the mind so that we can see directly without its interference and begin to see reality in a different way that allows this freedom to take place and allows concepts to drop away and to be able to see things without concepts and then to reintegrate later if you want with concepts. Intensity is the key word. I love you all. It's been a wonderful satsang. Take care of yourselves and see you again. May you all be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Thank you so much.